What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the TWC Stay Hated podcast. On this episode, I got a chance to sit down and chat with the fucking legend, John Anderson. I am a huge fan of this guy. Before we get into details of the episode, I just want to let you know the recording quality is kind of hit or miss, so I apologize for that. But otherwise, just want to remind you guys, Patreon is up and running. Great way to support the show. Lots of extra content on there. You get the vlog a week before it goes public, and that usually has some teasers for upcoming stuff. There's extra programming on there and Mental Money Extended, a bunch of extra stuff along with loyalty rewards if you stick around for longer than a month. As far as this episode is concerned, super stoked to get a chance to chat with John. I've been following this guy for years. He's a fucking animal. He's done everything from strongman, pro wrestling, pro bodybuilder, and he's just a total... When I say savage, I mean that in the most honest and genuine way. This dude is a fucking savage. So I don't want to give away too much about the episode. I was super stoked to have him. That's all I got for an intro. This is episode 108 of the TWC Stay Hated podcast. Enjoy it. What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the TWC Stay Hated podcast. On this episode, I am joined by the fucking legend, John Anderson. I've been following this dude for years. He is the definition of a fucking savage. I think I probably first found him in, like, I want to say 2014. I am super excited to have him on the show. I've already kissed his ass enough before we started recording, but I'm really excited to have him here. So first of all, thank you, John, and how are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing great, brother, man. I'm happy to be here talking to you, having some fun, entertaining people, and most of all sharing some hopefully very helpful information, inspire people to become the best versions of themselves.
Fucking right, dude. So the first thing I like to ask people on here, it's a pretty standard question, dude. Like, how old are you now, and how and when did you find lifting weights?
Oh, great question, bud. Well, we're gonna spend one hell of a long time for there, because I'm 49 years old.
Okay.
I'm gonna be 50 in January. And Jesus Christ, I found weight training. For the most part, it was in high school. Early on in high school, and I went to high school. I went to, if you wanted to play football, they made you have weightlifting for PE class. And it was just from, I mean, it was obviously just the kind of a safety thing. They wanted you to be in fairly good shape. And that's where it all started. And I was, I was a fucking fat little boy, scared of my own shadow, whopping learning disability. And, lifting weights was definitely very helpful for me. Keep in mind, I wasn't terribly strong when I started, and I was definitely not good at the sports I was lifting weights for. As I continued to lift weights for the sports, it became pretty clear that I was better at lifting the weights than I was the sports I was playing. And so that's kind of where the whole thing, that's where the whole weightlifting thing came around. By the time I was a junior in high school, I'd really kind of taken a lot of pride in it. And, I'd actually started to show some strength. I was the second kid in my junior class to squat 405 in high school, which was pretty big. And once that happened, I got a little taste of how good it felt to be recognized for your efforts. And that's where it all started. Then it was like, I was kind of addicted to that forward progress. I was addicted to, hey, great jobs. I was addicted to basically what it came, and it all came down to busting my ass. So the harder I worked, the more it happened, and, that was pretty much the start. And from there, I just was, because I was just this little guy who, I really wasn't accepted. I wanted to be, I wanted to fit in line, so to speak, but I really didn't. And so I got so used to doing things my way because I, And you're in high school, you know, you're either in or you're out. Well, I was out for most of it. So I was always doing my own thing. Well, I carried that right into training. And so that's kind of where some of my crazy, you know, methodologies, my deep water method, were born. You know, it's like, you know, a lot of times people are like, oh, how much can I squat? Well, I was like, well, how many times can I squat below five? So I was kind of coming at it from a different angle. And that's where a lot of my, you know, my crazy, you know, methodologies came from. You know, by the time I was, you know, in college, we're talking the early 90s. It seems like a long time ago, Jesus Christ. You know, I was training by myself because I was burning through training partners because I just loved it so much. I would go, I was in college, I would train in the athletes. I played rugby. I trained in the athletes gym, and I always go in time when no one was there. So I like to be by myself. Then I started to realize, holy shit, man, you're really fucking blowing people away. So I would go to like a cold gym. This is up in Portland, Oregon. And I would put on, you know, 405. I'd put on 500 pounds and, you know, knock it off. Yeah, I would, you know, crush these weights for, like, I remember the first time I went into a Gold's Gym and squatted 405 for, like, the low 20s. You know, people were just like, what the fuck is this guy doing? It didn't make sense to anybody.
Yeah. I remember that. I remember when it's one of my buddies started running your deep water stuff, you know, years ago, and I remember him hitting me back just being like, this guy's trying to fucking kill me with the volume. And that's always, you know, that's always been the thing. Do you think that, like, because obviously, like, you're a strong motherfucker, but on top of that, you're also, like, athletic and fucking jacked. Like, you're not a fat, strong guy. You're very, like, it's clear that you're, you know, you look very muscular, you stay pretty lean. Do you think that, like, that early, like, high volume craziness, like, do you think that really laid a foundation for later in your career?
There's no question, but along with what you just described, which is totally correct, is almost 50 years old, I still look in the mirror and see that fat little boy. Once a fat kid, always a fat kid. And I make that joke, but it's the truth. So to a certain extent, training fucking crazy, you know, my methodology of eating just huge amounts of protein, it's obviously performance-based, but at the same time, there's this underlying motivation to stay in good shape. Because, keep in mind, it was more traumatizing to me than anything else. Because as a fat son of a bitch, you know, I had a pretty good eating disorder. Even in my early 20s, I would eat something sweet. It was like I'm like a fucking alcoholic or a fucking heroin addict. I would eat something sweet. Next thing you know, I'm in the fucking safe by filling up two fucking brown bags of, you know, complete fucking junk food. And I'll go hide in my apartment for fucking 2 days and eat this shit.
Sure.
At this point, you know, I was already fucking 250, 60 pounds, strong as a motherfucker, but I'm still carrying that fat boy mentality around with me. So when I say fat, it's really not only just being a fucking fat little boy, but it was that behavior pattern that I developed that took me so long to learn to manage. Because you never get rid of it. You just learn, think about it, all of our problems in life. You don't ever really get rid of a problem. You just learn to manage it.
Yeah.
And so basically, you know, all of what your question is totally correct, but that the fact that I was always running to stay ahead of, you know, I was, like, when I say running, I was managing my problem. You know, so working hard and eating right. If I was that deep on the right side of the fence, it was really easy for me not to accidentally stumble and fall back to the wrong side. Does that make sense?
Sure. So, yeah.
Then at that point, next thing you know, it's like, you know, I'm just fucking in my mid-20s now. You know, I'm fucking just the strength is like, I look big, but I was so much stronger than I looked. And one of my training partners was like, dude, I know you don't want to do this. I was scared. You know, I was afraid, you know? And at that point in my life, I had not learned to use fear in my favor. It was still beating me up. And he said, oh, listen, just do it for me then. Because if I could and I thought I would do well, I would do it. He just wasn't as strong. So I said, fuck it, I got to go. And then they have showed up, won my first strongman contest. basically met Willie Wessels, who was the president of the amateur federation at the time. It was all one. And he's like, dude, when I showed up, he's like, this the bodybuilding contest is on the other side of the block. He was just joking.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, no, dude, I'm here to compete strongman. He's like, oh, I know you are. I was just joking. But again, I was just so, I mean, I just fucking showed up. I didn't know anybody, anything. I'm looking at all this shit going, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this, you know? So, anyways, Willie, I won that contest. Willie was a godsend because he gave me some pointers that I definitely needed. You know, I wanted to listen, dude. You need to go to this next contest and win your pro card. So, boom, won my pro card. Shit, a month after that, I went to a pro qualifier, placed well enough to go to pro national. So, my fourth ever strongman contest. I'm in pro nationals, and I'm basically lining up against the Phil Fisters and the Mark Phillippes, and these are the people I've been watching on TV, you know?
Right.
And all in a six-month period, I went from watching these guys on TV, now I'm in the tent, getting ready staged up, getting ready to go out the first bell of these guys. So I was shitting in my fucking pants.
I bet, dude. I bet. There's not many guys who have visible abs and are doing strongmen as well, so you probably stuck out like a sore thumb amongst those fucking giants.
Yeah, and that really fucking helped because, you know, especially in those days, they were really trying to make the sport grow. You know, the social media wasn't alive yet. There was no social media.
Sure.
You know, which was a totally different time. And so they see somebody like me coming along. They were trying to get me out where it was visible for sure because it was like that was the Marius Pudzianowski era. They're like, fuck, we got our own Marius now, you know?
Right.
I mean, never came close to me beating Marius. I beat Marius in a handful of events, but never a contest. I mean, that guy was just another level. But anyway, yeah, so that was so you're totally correct. I mean, you know, all of that, the best thing about it was what I described as a fat little fucker and not being accepted and having to find my own way was what really drove me to do all that fucking outside the box, fucking heavy, crazy volume shit, which is really what cut my fucking teeth nice and sharp for fucking strongman, because strongman is, it's okay, how many times can you lift this for 60 seconds? Well, fuck, I've been doing that for a decade.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was perfect.
Sure.
It was perfect. They're like, yeah, this is a squat for reps. How much can you do in 60 seconds? I'm like, in my mind, I'm going, ding, 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 ding. I can do this. I'm good, you know?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so that was, that's so very much correct. Yeah, you're totally correct, brother.
I think I've read somewhere, maybe I heard you say it, like, you were one of the first guys to get, like, real sponsorship stuff, right? Like when you were with...
Because in those times, if you remember correctly, that was... So now we're going into... Now we're in, like, the early 2000s, right? 2002-ish. And that was one of the big dot-com booms. There was all these fucking startup companies and energy drinks coming out left and right.
Sure.
So I can't remember where it was. This guy comes up and he says, hey, he says, you know, I'm starting this energy drink called Havoc. And, you know, would you like to be sponsored? I'm like, yeah. And I'm thinking, yeah, how many fucking cases of your drink am I going to get?
Yeah.
Because, you know, shortly before that, I got my first sponsor with House of Pain with the clothing, like, yeah, we'll give you five shirts a month. So I thought, in my mind, that was a sponsor.
Sure.
And they're like, yeah, we're starting up. We're going to be going public here soon. So as soon as we go public, you're going to be part of our promotion. They just needed to give money. They, you know, it's the way that when they take all this money in, they have this place at marketing and all this other shit. So, dude, I was just wearing a Havoc t-shirt. You know, fucking making $3,000 a month. It was fucking amazing. I was like, Jesus Christ. That was kind of the first moment where, you know, keep in mind, this is the early 2000s. That was actually a fairly good, that was a pretty fucking chunky sponsorship for those guys, you know?
Yeah, you can survive. You can survive on that.
Especially for the sport of strongman.
Sure.
You know?
Did you, now, with all that went on with, like, I just know powerlifting culture. I don't really know strongman culture that well. So, like, when you got started getting that money and started getting, like, you know, eyeballs on you and people paying attention, maybe, you know, because you were good, but also because of how you looked, was there any, like, did you catch any shit from the other boys, like, in the strongman world? Like, were they like, who the fuck is this guy with his fucking veins and his abs and shit? Like,
there was a little bit of that in the beginning for sure, because, you know, a lot of the guys, once I got to know them, like once I started to travel with them, once you start to get to know me, you realize I'm as down to earth as it gets.
Sure.
I'm fucking non-judgmental. I'm happy. I'm supportive. You know, and of course, they, you know, the guys that didn't know me, you know, they were just like, oh, this fucking bodybuilder. Like, Magnus is now one of my pretty good buddies. I love him. We had a great relationship when I was competing. Whenever I see him, it's great. But first time we ever met, he literally was talking to, I can't remember who, I think it was Mark Phillippe, who was just to my left, talking about me. And he's like, look at these fucking bodybuilders coming into the sport of strongman.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Jesus Christ. This is the fucking head judge of the contest tomorrow, and he's fucking chewing on me, won't even do it. He's like talking about me, and I'm standing fucking 2 feet away, and I'm well within the vision of, you know, so it was pretty crazy. I mean, so yeah, I was getting a little bit of flack.
Go ahead.
But then what happened is as I started to really, everybody started to realize how hard it worked, and, you know, it was, of course, there was a look, but there was also a lot of explosiveness. There was a lot of function. I was fast. I was strong. And I was always down to fucking help. You know, I wasn't some fucking too good. I wasn't too cool for school. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And as soon as people realized that, you know, then the people that didn't like me, they kind of all just kind of fell in line, because there were too many people that were starting to like me. Like, one of my buddies, real good buddies, like Chad Coy in the beginning, you know, he was actually one of the few I've ever known naturals in the sport, which is pretty fucking crazy.
Wild.
A lot.
Yeah.
At a high level, too. And he started off, of course, he was looking at me going, this fucking gearhead, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't long before we talked, and fuck, that was one of my better fucking buddies. I mean, shit, it's so, yeah, you're totally correct. There was some flack, but as soon as people got to know me, it was very different after that.
Well, the fucking people, real people, like, like, are gonna get some flack in the beginning, and then as long as you stick around and you're a real dude, they kind of are forced to, they're forced to accept you, because it's like, well, what else does he have to do, man? Like, fucking guy looks great and he's crushing it. Can you kind of talk about the diet stuff, dude? Because that shit has always been the wildest. Did I hear you on a podcast like forever ago? You're like, eating like 4 or 5 rotisserie chickens in one day, you fucking maniac. Like, what is the, like, where did it come from?
Here's the story, brother. The best part about my training and my diet, it's all fucking been organically developed myself through dealing with my own issues. That's the best part about it, is, like I said, there was no internet when I was doing all this shit in the beginning, when I was starting to train. There was, you know, there's no, and in those days, when you found a big guy in the gym, he wasn't telling you shit. It was very different, you know?
Right.
And so, basically, you know, I'm starting to get a little stronger, and I'm starting to take this kind of towards the end of high school, you know? I'm really taking some pride in this, and at that point, you're seeing these fucking commercials on TV, which is really the only media other than newspaper or magazine. And, you know, it's like, eat wheat. Remember those commercials?
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
My shit did. So I was like, well, fuck, I'm going to start eating wheat. So I was eating loaves of fucking wheat.
What?
I had no idea. It was probably making me into a fat little boy again, but I was working so hard, I was probably burning it off. Well, and keep in mind, at this point, you know, I'm showing up to fucking school and high school at lunch with 2 fucking loaves of wheat bread for fucking lunch.
Holy shit. I mean. Yeah.
And you know, this is, I just recently have been accepted. Now all these guys are looking at me, fuck, what do we accept this fucking weirdo for? He's sitting there at a table eating fucking 2 loaves of wheat bread, you know? Anyway, so basically, that was clearly the wrong thing to do. My mom somehow didn't get enough wheat bread. We ran out. So I'm looking at fucking, what am I going to eat? There's a whole bunch of tuna. So I fucking started fucking eating a whole bunch of tuna. About 2 days, I was eating tuna, just tons of tuna. It's kind of my mind, very one track. If I'm going to do something, I'm just going to do it all the way. I don't really see the middle.
Sure.
Well, just in 2 days, I was like, something feels different in the gym. I was like, this is fucking crazy. I mean, you can tell when you're warming up, like, this feels too good.
Right.
You know before you get to those heavy weights, you're going to fucking destroy them. And by day two of tuna fish, I was like, okay, something's going on here. And I'm sitting there going, okay, what is different? And I'm like, holy shit, the only thing different is I'm eating tuna fish.
Sure.
Bam. The light bulb went off, and I realized, okay, what is tuna? Okay, well, tuna is protein. So chicken is protein. All these, I started eating tons of protein. And my strength just started going fucking nuts. And it was like, at that point, I've been, from that point forward, so you're talking early 90s, 1990-91, I've been eating a minimum of 4 pounds of flesh a day. Now, granted, as I got older and got bigger, that 4 turned into 6, 7, you know, and this is all cuts, mind you. That makes sense? Because I weigh my food after I cook it.
Okay, so yeah,
you can only do the math on that. So you have that 4 pounds, it's probably more like 5.5 or 6, you know. So anyway, tons of protein was what was making me strong. And I realized, holy shit, I'm getting strong and I'm actually getting tighter. And so I was like, Jesus Christ, it's like, fucking A. You know, it's like my mom that was the saint because she ran out of wheat bread.
Yeah.
And so basically that was the root. All right. Now from there, of course, you can't only eat protein. You're going to want other foods. And so of course I was still, you know, I hadn't discovered fat. Once I discovered the essential fats, which is way down the road, then everything really started to change. But the roots of eating all this protein, that's how it started. And I started to realize that the more protein I would eat, the stronger I would get. And so it was almost like, it was in my mind, a simple formula. Let's put another 0.5 pound in. Like, how much can you fit in? So I was eating a ton and eating probably more than I should have. And, you know, I believed long before they proved it scientifically that my body was burning protein for a fuel source, because I was like, I'm not eating carbohydrates intentionally. You know, and I have plenty of energy. And then once I started to realize that, you know, understand that fats as well as carbohydrates are fuel, then I started to kind of play with the fats a little bit. And because somewhere in this time period, I realized that every time I had something sweet, I would go to the wrong side of the fence again. So I knew that the protein was making me strong. I have a moment a week, just eat a fucking cookie, and I spend a couple of days trying to get back on track. Right? So That was kind of my struggle. So then when I realized that, okay, fats are also a source of energy, I can leave the carbohydrate behind. You know, I can leave, it's almost like I was a fucking heroin addict. You know, it's like, you can't ask a heroin addict to just take, you know, a little bit of heroin every day. And it doesn't
right.
work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, keep that fucking heroin over there. I can have my, you know, my vegetables, and I can have my protein, and I can have my fats. And then I started to realize that, you know, as long as I didn't have gaps in my diet, I'm eating fats, that, you know, I was having this really consistent energy. And that's where the whole thing started to develop, brother. And then as I got bigger, stronger, learned more about nutrition. So I started studying nutrition based upon my own body's reactions. Oh, fuck. You know, so again, mid-90s, I was like, Jesus Christ. And it wasn't based on science, you know. I was kind of doing what was working for me. Even the science would say otherwise.
Yeah.
I didn't really care about science. I was like, well, if science says that I can't do this, or I'm doing it, I don't give a shit what science says. I want to squat 600%. I want to squat 700%. If eating all this protein is doing it, you know? And so there's the inception of my deep water method with training and with nutrition, right?
Yeah. So when it comes to when it comes to carbohydrates, were you just like not fucking around with like anything at all, like no rice or no, or were you having that in there? Like, I'm just trying to figure out how the fuck you ate that much meat and had room for anything else.
Well, that was part of once I remember I was saying that I would have stuff to sweep, I'd fall off the deep end, right? Well, that was where I started to realize, okay, I'm better off just fucking overeat. See, I was overeating from a youngster, so I was going to be overeating somehow, some way. So that's also where protein came. I can overeat protein, and I don't end up going into hiding and eating junk food. You know, I can overeat protein, and I just keep getting stronger. I can overeat protein, I keep getting leaner. So that was one of my concepts early on. If I eat so much protein, I don't have room for anything
else. Sure.
You know? Now, definitely how I knew that I needed vegetables. That was, I hear again, it was probably more for my mom than anything else. And funny enough, you know, as a kid, my favorite fucking cartoon was Popeye. So I have, even to this day, I love spinach.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So, as far as like, nowadays, you know, like, with your age and stuff, are you still on that diet where it's like fucking, you know, just protein? Really? No shit.
So here's the thing. I mean, I'm 49 years old. I'm going to be 50 soon. And I completely attribute, you know, how I look, how I feel, how I perform to my diet. Because, you know, like as you get older, inflammation is a huge problem you have to manage. Well, any sort of a sugar, a carbohydrate, creates an inflammation in the body. It's whether it's a little or a lot. And so for me, I key now, especially, I key on the really, really essential fats. So, you know, I basically eat chicken, I eat beef, I eat egg whites, lots of avocado, coconut-based stuff. Coconut is a really good one. But yeah, my diet is very simple. I never, ever allow myself to be hungry. And it's not because I think, you know, a lot of times people think that, you know, like hunger sometimes is kind of misunderstood. I don't want to let myself get hungry because that's my body telling me it needs more fuel. Well, if it needs more fuel, then it's not healing, it's not building, it's not giving me energy. So I eat on a schedule. I don't want my body to tell me that it needs something. I want to give it to it before it needs it. So that's where my schedule comes from in terms of my eating. And at this point, at my age, I tend to start off, my breakfast is always going to have a fair amount of fat. Usually avocado is my favorite. Avocado for me breaks down into energy really quickly. And then I'll have, fats heavier at night. And here's why. As I get older, I realize that when I put fats in the day, it kind of slows me down. Because the fats are a slower digestion process, right?
Okay.
And so you think like this. If your processing is kind of what feeds your metabolism, right? Well, if your processing is fast and you're getting a lot of fuel to your metabolism, which is kind of like a fire, that fire burns hot. You've got tons of energy, you've got tons of focus. When that thing bogs down is when you kind of feel tired and lethargic, you know?
Yeah.
So, a lot of times people really just kind of miss it. You know, in all of what I do with my coaching and my nutrition counseling, I key on digestion. People just miss that altogether. You know, they're like, oh, I ate this and I ate this and I ate this. Well, how does that digest? And they're like, I don't know. Well, fuck, the digestion is everything. You put something in your stomach and it's not efficient getting to your system. You're fucking the whole process up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really interesting that you base all of your stuff off of like kind of intuitive and how you feel. Because I think,
oh, brother, 100%. I do that with everything. With my clients, I teach them to feel their rest period. I teach them to feel the signals of the body, because once you understand the signals of the body, you've got this really, really great relationship, and the fucking body is an amazing creature, and it will do amazing things, but you've got to give it the resources for it to optimize. And if you don't understand the signals of the body, you're not going to give it what it needs. It will never optimize.
Sure. Yeah. So I kind of want to jump around a little bit here. I know that you have I know that you did some pro wrestling overseas, and
yes.
I got to figure that you saw some wild shit over there. I would love to hear some of like what your experience was like over there, and maybe a story, like something fucking crazy that you saw, with just like, because culturally I'm sure it was weird, and the time frame and what you were doing is kind of a obscure thing. So like, what was that like for you, and maybe some of the stuff that went on there that was kind of wacky?
Well, you kind of set that stage. So when I retired from Strongman, it was kind of like when I started Strongman, I went from kind of unknown to, you know, being recognized very quickly. Well, same thing happened with wrestling, is the way I look. So when I retired from Strongman and went to wrestling, it was only about a 9-month period before I was in Japan doing my first pay-per-view as my first ever wrestling match, meaning...
Holy shit.
Yeah, I did a couple of little shitty ones in the high school gym to get some footage, you know, so I could send the footage over there. I actually had an agent at the time that was doing some TV stuff, and he just fully fraudulated a fucking resume that said I knew what I was doing. But I don't think they really cared. They just saw this fucking big guy. I was legitimate. They love legitimacy. I came from a legitimate sport, and so they loved that. So all of a sudden, it's like my 7th ever wrestling match. And I'm fucking in Sapporo, Japan, at a pay-per-view with like 25,000 people. And I was just shitting in my pants. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know? And then the culture over there was, I mean, I was just thrown into it. I knew nothing about it. I mean, the handlers that we would have, the translators and stuff would help us. I mean, I'm this fucking 300-pound guy, and it's just me. People who know me, I fucking, even listen to me, I'm fucking making all sorts of fucking sounds, clearing my throat, I fucking fart, and I'm fucking burping, I'm farmer blowing everywhere, you know, that's just me.
Yeah.
These fucking Japanese people are looking at me, and they're just like, they're almost so appalled that they can't even show that they're appalled. I'm seeing people look at me, and they're just like their eyes are glazed over, like a full deer in the headlights. And I'm thinking, oh man, you know, they must think that, you know, I haven't seen a big white guy in a while, right? You know,
right?
I'm thinking, I'm giving myself kudos, and the translators are telling me, no, they think you're an animal. In terms of the culture, you know, we would go out to dinner, like we'd have sponsored dinners, and you know, you would eat the things that you would eat there. You'd eat raw beef, you'd eat raw horse, you'd eat all sorts of crazy things you'd eat, but it was all so, so good, you know. And you know, Japan as a whole, it was a great experience, I'll tell you. You know, the feeling of walking out in the Tokyo Dome with, you know, 40,000 to 50,000 people, man, I got to tell you, that's a feeling that's probably never going to be matched.
Sure.
You know, it's the first time I remember I'm standing backstage, and I'm already fucking nervous because I know how many people are out there, and they set off these pirates, you know, the explosions and shit. I didn't see that. They gave us the warning, but I missed it. And oh my God, and it like freaks me out. My heart is pounding. Also, my music plays, and I'm supposed to be walking out there. Well, you're supposed to be calm, right? Well, the walk from the stage to the ring is like 4 minutes, so I have plenty of time to calm myself down. And I'm looking around, and you can't even see the people up in the top. And it was just, it was absolutely amazing experience. And then, of course, my first match there, because my character was Strongbow. That was my name. I came from Strongbow.
Okay.
And so I had to pick a 6'8", 375-pounder over my head, as they call it, a gorilla press, in my first ever Tokyo Dome show. So that was like, not only am I freaked out, but I have to do something that is going to be a serious motherfucker, you know? So, but yeah, my time in Japan was a lot of fun. And you know, unfortunately, what happens in that business is you're just kind of a dirty dish towel. You know, they use you up, and when they squeeze everything out of you, they throw you away.
Sure.
You know? And I was actually, you know, I was, because the company I worked for, New Japan, there was a sister company called CMLL Mexico City. So I was often flying back and forth between the two. So sometimes I would, you know, I'd be in Tokyo for a short week, then I'd go down to Mexico City for a short week and then come back. So it was a pretty crazy schedule. And I'm not meaning to sound like a bitch, because, I mean, when you're trying to get there, that's all you want, is to be wanted enough for them to be flying you all over the place to make all these different shows. But right. When you're in the middle of it, dude, it was for that travel schedule was brutal.
Yeah, I bet.
And I ended up adapting. I got more injuries in wrestling than I did in strongman. I ended up adapting pretty massive painkiller addiction on and off through that career. So I totally attribute my discipline, you know, and, you know, some of the stuff we talked about earlier with my training, it allowed me to get off that shit, you know, because you get hurt, you go get fixed, you come back, and you're on these pills. And then next thing, you're not taking the pills for the pain, you're taking the pills to feel normal, you know?
Yeah.
You always find a way to justify, oh, you know, I got to have a good show tonight, so I better take this. You know, I need to make sure I don't, it's the devil's work, but that voice that's telling you you need it is really convincing.
Yeah. Hey, man. So that's my, you know, obviously we don't know each other, you know, at all really. And that's my background too, man. I, you know, I had a pretty nasty opiate addiction and, 11 years clean this year, but, that shit is thank you. That shit is a motherfucker, dude. And I think it's really important for a guy like you to put it out there like that, man, because people look at you and they think you're invincible. Like, you look at this fucking guy, he's almost 50 and he's got traps up to his fucking earlobes, and people think, you know, people think you're invincible, but that shit doesn't care how strong you are. Like, it'll fuck you up no matter what.
Stuff will make you a little bitch, no matter how big and strong you think you are.
No, shit, dude. Yeah, that's real.
And I'm so glad that you said that, because, you know, I'm happy to talk about this stuff, because I agree with exactly what you said. Anybody listening, if you're having trouble, man, you jump in my Instagram DM, you know, and I'll be happy to talk with you and give you some inspirational shit to try to get you on the right path to getting off that stuff, because, you know, you're trapped. Once you're addicted to that stuff, you basically put yourself in your own jail and you just don't realize it. You know,
yeah.
You created walls around yourself. That's... You know, and at first the walls seem like they're, you know, first they, you need those walls. You what happens, you get deep enough in them and you depend on those walls. You know, that pill is what, nothing in life is more important than that pill. And once that happens, that your life is ready to fall apart. So if anybody out there is somewhere down this path, man, and you want to talk to me about it, you just jump into my DM and I'll be happy to go back and forth with you, because sometimes just talking to somebody who's been there and just like you said, knowing that, you know, happens to everybody. You know?
Yeah. Doesn't matter how jacked you are, dude, that shit is real deal. And I really commend you for being open about it, because I know that it's like people feel shame with it, and it's like it's an embarrassing thing when you're going through it too, because you're like, man, I'm like, especially guys with the same mindset like you might have or I have, where it's like you feel like a pussy because you're like, this shit is running my life and I'm fucking, you know, how did I let this happen or whatever. And it does kind of, it can spiral out of control. So I commend you for talking about that. What's going on with you now? Like what's your days look like now? I think it's important to talk about strength athletes as they get older. Sometimes guys kind of get lost in the weeds because they don't have an identity outside of it or whatever. And what's it like for you right now? Because, you know, I got to assume you're not doing any strongman competitions anytime soon, but what's your day to day like now? What are your goals and how are you managing, you know, life at this stage of your career?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, when I got released from wrestling, this was I was 42 at the time. 42. And that was when I was literally, I had probably about a month of just being completely lost. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going back to strength. I'm too old. So I basically, at that point, I said, well, I'm going to try bodybuilding. So I did my first bodybuilding contest, just wiped it out, you know. And that's when I showed up, everybody, you know, because I've been sponsored for so long, I showed up in my MHP sweatsuit. All the fucking other competitors thought I was the guest poster. I'm like, no, I'm here to compete.
Right.
So I basically won that first contest, and then won a national my next contest. So I became pro right away as a bodybuilder, and that's really been kind of, keep in mind, I got no illusions of winning Mr. Olympia. Fuck, man, I'm an old son of a bitch.
Sure.
I still compete in the Open, but I don't think that's going to last too much longer. I'll be competing in the 50s before too long. But what I'm saying is that me going into bodybuilding gave me that next thing to work on. And ultimately, looking back, I realized it was absolutely necessary, because had I not done what I did, and keep in mind, I take a lot of pride in the fact that I went into and became pro at a third sport and did it, and I became pro at two contests, which is pretty rare.
Insane, yeah.
But the most important thing is it gave me, I hate to use the word identity, but it gave my training another purpose. And I think one of the things that we're talking about here is when strength athletes kind of get to that point where they hit their peak and they start coming down the backside of their career, their training loses purpose. And, you know, we train, if you think about it, of course we train for a lot of reasons. Well, for anybody out there who's kind of like, feel like they've kind of lost their identity, find a new purpose for your training. Because really what it comes down to, we all train because we love it. You know, of course, the competitions are great and all the things that go into that. So for me, I'll bodybuild until one day I don't wake up. Because when I love to train, but my training is always better and it's always more fun when I have a purpose, when I have a reason to do it versus
sure.
just kind of floating. I always tell people, listen, you have to have a goal. You have to have a vision. Otherwise, you're just floating around and you never really get anything done. And that's where I think as a person, we all need to feel like we wake up and we make some sort of a step forward every day. That way we go to bed that night and we feel accomplished. That's one of my big mottos is, how do I get a little bit better today? That's my job. Every day when my feet hit the ground, I have to find a way to get better today than I was yesterday. It can be the smallest little thing. But if you don't have a purpose in every day, you know, it's almost like, you know, we all fight this war of life. You know, life is, you know, a series of challenges and obstacles and problems, if you will. Well, I mean, you win, there's a daily battle. If you win your daily battle, you're going to win the war of life, you know, and sometimes the war of life seems overwhelming. Well, break it down to the day, you know.
Oh, that's
how are
so
you getting better?
Yeah, dude, that is so fucking powerful.
Oh, dude, it fucking keeps me. I mean, without that, if I don't have that, my mind goes into places to start getting me into trouble. I need to stay focused on constructive shit.
Sure. Yeah, sure. No, and hey, man, I think that's great to find, like, you know, finding one thing to get better at that day or whatever. I forget who said it. Someone smarter than me said this, but it's like, you know, if you think of life as like a pile of rocks that you're moving, it's like some days you're going to move them with a shovel, some days you're going to move them with a spoon, but as long as it's moving, it doesn't really matter. You just keep chipping away at it. And I think that you fucking nailed it with that. Hey, we're kind of closing in on 45 minutes here. I ask a question at the end of every podcast, and it's the same question. I think personal development is fucking huge. I think it's super important. So you obviously have a ton of experience. You have done all sorts of crazy shit inside the gym, outside the gym, competing, all that stuff. If you could go back to maybe 20-year-old John Anderson and give yourself a piece of advice or something you wish you knew when you were a young man, what would you tell yourself? You know, it could be training, it could be life, it could be anything. Like, what's the piece of advice you wish you had known back then that you know now?
And really what it comes down to it is that if I could go back and give myself one piece of advice, And it would be very simple. It would be to basically do everything at full speed, because there's so many periods in your life where you don't quite know if you're doing the right thing and you're doing it 65-75%. There's nothing, even if it's the wrong thing, do it wide open, because I know that you're going to make a mistake. You're going to fail. You need those failures. If you fail wide open, you learn more. And when I was afraid of failure, I would tend to do things not wide open because I was afraid, like, what? Everybody's going to know I failed. Who fucking gives a shit? Go fail.
Yes.
You know, go fail, because you're going to learn more. Don't go into something half-assed. Go into it wide open and realize you're probably going to fail a whole lot more than you're going to succeed. But that's okay, because this is the piece of advice I would give myself right here. You have to fail. Failure is a part of the success, part of the equation for success. You cannot be successful without failing over and over first. And it took me a long, I wasted too many years getting over the fear of failure.
Fucking right, man. That is awesome, powerful stuff, dude. I really appreciate that. That's like a very well thought out answer, and you can tell that that's how you live your life. So thank you for that. And hey, do you want to give out like your social media, how people can get in touch with you real quick, like if you have a website, all that stuff?
You got it. So I try to keep it simple. I like to connect with people. I love to talk to people, inspire people. So I spend most of my time in terms of connecting with people, it's going to be in my Instagram, in the DM. You come in there, you ask me a question. I'm in there every day because I make it a part of my day to connect with people, inspire people. So it's at the John Anderson. Keep in mind, my name's all fucked up. I got J-O-N on the front on the first name, and Anderson is A-N-D-E-R-S-E-N on the last name. So I got the fucking double whammy. So you'll know if you find the right fucking page, because you're going to see me fucking flexing my muscles all over the
Are you doing coaching or anything, if people want to get coached or mentored or anything like that?
Yeah, I do both. I mean, nutrition coaching is definitely my specialty. Here's the thing, I can help someone put their nutrition into a place where they're going to have more energy, more focus. They're going to become a better version of themselves. So, yeah, I mean, I love to coach, and really what it comes down to is mentoring. But, you know, people come to me, they have their goals. I basically figure out the formula, teach it to them. All of my coaching is to teach them to be on their own. Self-sufficiency is the key. A coach is not helping somebody by leading them along blindly. A good coach will change a life, not just a physique.
Oh, that's fucking awesome, dude. So if somebody wants to get coached by you, they just slide into the DMs, shoot you a message?
That's it. That's it. Hands down, the best way to reach me. And I'm in there every day. So you'll never have to wait 24 hours to hear back from me.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, thank you again, John, for coming on. I really appreciate it. Been a big fan for years, so thank you so much. And that's all we got for today, guys. If you want to follow me, my personal page is AnthonyCW13. The trigger warning page is trigger_warning_conjugate for all of your mental Monday snapback needs. That's all we got for today. Thanks again for listening to the TWC Stay Hated podcast. And as always, stay hated, motherfuckers.